we were talking to Sasha Kumar, and I wanted to say right at the beginning that we have been loving the drinks that he sent with tamarind. Sashi, we need a little background here because parts of the world couldn't exist without tamarind, but there are people in other parts of the world that haven't a clue what tamarind is, even though it was declared the flavor for 2024. We know tamarind very well. Our cousin in Tasmania grows tamarind. So we always had plenty of it. How could you explain what tamarind is and what the flavor actually is? It's kind of a complicated flavor.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first off, thank you, Anne and Peter. It's wonderful to be on this podcast. So well renowned, and I'm excited, and the team is excited for us to be featured. So thank you for having us on. Tamarind is a really interesting ingredient. It's actually a fruit. It grows on a tree. The tree grows in tropical climates throughout the world. So, it can be a 100-foot tree, and it can live up to 200-plus years. I think there's a tamarind tree in the Dominican that's 200-plus years old. And so it has a really, really interesting background. And, when we were doing some research as to where this grows and its familiarity, it turns out that tamarind is actually really popular and has a long history in five major cultures in the world. It originated in East Africa in the tropical climate there, and then it spread throughout South Asia and East Asia, and then it was brought over to the West through the Europeans and got very popular in the Caribbean and Mexico and parts of Latin America. So in those five major cultures, tamarind, like you mentioned, is very well renowned. It's used in a wide variety of products and ingredients. So, it was really just us trying to figure out as up-and-coming consumers why, hasn't it broken into the American market? And
that
really,
Why is it? I mean, I've read where people growing up in India as young children and teenagers, they had tamarind candy, which is the last thing I would think of as a use for tamarind. And everybody else seems to know what it is. And it's never made its way in Western Europe or the U.S. Why?
I think that's the right question that we really dove into as a team here and tried to figure out why hasn't it penetrated the U.S. market. And it came back to two or three really, really important things. And so just starting from the top, one, it hasn't been positioned the right way. As we did our first couple of iterations of this product, you're talking, back to 2016, we did a lot of customer research to figure out what is the best way for an American consumer to kind of really get familiar and use this product the right way. We had to answer a couple of really quick questions, which is, what is it and how do you use it? And what we kept coming back to is in the American market, condiments are the most popular use case, and barbecue sauce is and might be still the most popular condiment. And that fits really well with the properties of tamarind. Tamarind, and part of your earlier question, is actually a little bit tart and it's a little bit tangy, and most importantly, it is an incredibly good preservative. And so it works really well with what is the original use case of barbecue, which is to marinate your meats, it's to marinate your vegetables.
Okay.
And so it hasn't been positioned in a way that consumers here really eat their food and try new products. And so as we did research with our customers, we kept coming back to, well, how can we get them interested? And then we could never move away from barbecue sauce. It really answered top-of-line questions for the consumer. And then...
It makes a great curry, by the way.
that's exactly right. It is such a wonderful fruit. And, you know, that comes to the second part of Tamarind Heads and why we are, you know, have the products that we have, is we had to make a barbecue sauce. And that goes to my second point as to why it hasn't been penetrated, is it hasn't been positioned the right way. And of the ways it's currently positioned, it's not in an aisle and not positioned for people to go and grab it and know how to use it. Right now, it's mostly in paste. It's mostly comes in dry blocks in various ethnic stores and even kind of mainstream stores. It hasn't been infused into the barbecue sauce and condiment aisle in a way that makes it easy for consumers to understand and really get the flavor.
Right. We found out from our cousin, his wife actually, it freezes really well as a basic fruit, and you can use it as an ingredient in anything.
That's exactly right.
Do we still have our guest on the line, love?
What, honey?
Is he still on the line?
And me?
Our guest.
He's on the line.
He is? I don't hear him.
Oh, I don't know why. I hear him fine.
Well, that's fine, love. Just keep going. Don't worry about me, then.
Okay. So, anyhow, so what did you, I guess I'm trying to figure out the backstory here. I mean, how did you suddenly turn into using this little known and not understood ingredient to build a company?
So I would say, Anne, this goes back to, you know, probably the early 2000s. You know, my family has had a local farmer's market stand for years.
Need to speak up.
Okay. Your family? Go ahead.
Peter, can you hear me now?
No, I'm still, you're very quiet.
I can hear him fine.
You can? Well, if you can hear him fine, then don't worry about me.
Okay. So your family has a long history with Tamarind, the product, right?
Well, it has a long history just working with food and cooking, and there was a farmer's market that we would frequent back to the early 2000s. And I really became involved when I went to graduate school in the mid-2010s, in 2016 through 2018. And I wanted to try something entrepreneurial, and with the background in food, I decided to make those attempts. And I was lucky enough, and who's now my co-founder, the director of the dining program at the graduate school I was at, was heavily involved in helping curate entrepreneurial ideas with students and let me come into the kitchen and start working and cooking. And what kept coming up is there's a sauce here that we had that was really resonating with the students, the faculty, and the kitchen staff as well. And then the best thing that came out of it is when you're working in food service and you're serving 1,000-plus students 3 squares a day, you want a product that you can easily switch in and out and creates a whole new different flavor profile, and it doesn't take too much time. And that's really where, you know, working with sauces as a tool for chefs to kind of expand their repertoire in a quick, easy way came into being, And that's really how we really started to push ahead with this tamarind-based product.
Now, but you basically were mentored in entrepreneurship anyhow, right?
A little bit. I would say that, you know, having the freedom in graduate school to study and also experiment really kind of blossomed that. It's especially having, you know, my co-founder, Jim, who was really, you know, instrumental in kind of pushing it forward. He has a, you know, 30-plus year history in restaurants and food service. So, you know, having that initial nod of approval and saying, hey, you know, you have something interesting here and we should kind of keep pushing it forward, you know, at that stage, you really just need somebody and, you know, somebody influential and somebody who knows the world to give it a green light to kind of have you keep pushing forward.
So now, when was all this happening? I mean, give me a time frame here. You were in graduate school?
That's correct, yes. I was in graduate school from 2016 to 2018 at the Tuck School of Business, and my co-founder Jim was the director of dining there. And by the end of those 2 years, after we had done a lot of trials, we kind of came to the conclusion that these sauces were interesting and that we should kind of consider, you know, pushing it ahead and pushing forward. And that's really where, when I mentioned earlier, our first iteration of the product came to being. We were actually able to get some really good traction within the school itself, serving as food service ingredient. We were able to get it positioned into a couple of Chipotle-style known as Boloco restaurants in town. We were actually able to get into a couple of burger restaurants as well and a couple of co-ops in town. And that's really where we started doing a lot of customer research, talking to customers on why did they choose this product, what did they use it for, what do you want to learn from it, what's interesting, what's unique, how should we consider the brand positioning. And then from that point on, we ended up doing a lot of work on figuring out, well, okay, tamarind is an interesting ingredient. People seem to like it. Mm-hmm. So let's position it in the right way for customers to be attracted and learn how to use it. And then we spent, you know, 3 to 5 years really trying to figure out how do we create a tamarind-based barbecue sauce that meets our highest quality standards. Because what we ended up with, Anne, is a product that is vegan, gluten-free, no preservatives, no corn syrup, that truly stands out in this category and, you know, is one of the reasons why we won the SoFi Award for the top barbecue sauce this year.
Uh-huh.
That's a great win. Boy, is that a great win.
I mean, that's a really crowded field.
I would say, yeah. Ann and Peter, we are
extremely
honored.
You could have picked an easier category. I mean, let's put it that way. Yeah, we got inundated with barbecue sauces, so, I mean, it's a really crowded field. So you had to think hard to put the risk up there, really.
Now, there's a little cartoon character that's on your website. Does he or she have a name?
I don't know if we have a cartoon character. Our website is tamarindheads.com.
Tamarindheads. Why did you pick that tamarindheads? So that's sort of funny.
So, you know, the beauty about the tamarind ingredient actually is that it, you know, it has such a long history in so many cultures. The name actually comes from the British who were in the Goa Islands off the coast of India, and tamarind has such an interesting legendary status that as part of the Goan culture, the locals used to keep tamarind because they thought it would push away evildoers, and it would push away evildoers. And so the British actually would hang it in their ear, and they became known as tamarind heads. And so it's really just a play on the culture and the legendary history of tamarind. And the greatest part about it is, you know, as people kind of learn about the fruit and our product, almost every single major culture where tamarind is popular has a history, has so much fun with the ingredient, and it's ingrained in kind of their daily being.
Yeah, we have cousins that go to Goa regularly. It's one place I've always wanted to go, but never have. There's strong Portuguese influence there too, huh?
Yeah, it's a really wonderful fruit, and you know, just to add, one of the I think reasons we kind of were able to take the award in this really crowded category, you know, is McCormick announced that the flavor of the year for 2024 is tamarind. So I think we're really tapping into the zeitgeist. That's where you're going to see more tamarind-flavored products and tamarind-forward products. And where Tamarind Heads stands out is our, you know, almost zealous focus on quality and how we positioned our product. You know, we spent many, many years trying to make what you and Peter tasted today and what the judges have tasted as well.
Yeah, well, you're sounding a lot like a business school grad, I have to say. you know from the business side. From the culinary side, I mean, would you think of making candy with tamarind?
You know, from the culinary side, Ann, you absolutely can. I think there's a breadth of versatility of this product. You know, just a couple of the options that we were able to highlight at our booth at the Fancy Food Show just a couple of weeks ago, you know, we had the product by itself in a way where people, for example, could use it as a condiment, say with their morning eggs, or they could use it as a dipping product for, you know, chicken fingers or French fries. We created it as an aioli. We mixed it in with a little bit of mayonnaise where people could imagine making a sandwich out of it, say putting it on your turkey sandwich for lunch. And then we actually, you know, put out an example of a true barbecue option with a pulled chicken. And you can do it in multiple different ways. You can have a pulled pork. You can do some ribs. So, you know, there's a really strong versatility here, and I think we're really just tapping in you know, to some of the categories where we could really influence this flavor. And I think it always goes back to the quality of the product. You know, when our quality is
how hard is it to locate it? If you're not in a major metropolitan area, how do you even lay hands on it?
So
tamarind itself. And then I want to know about your product.
Sure. The tamarind fruit itself, is you can usually find it in ethnic stores, whether they're Asian or whether they're Latin American focused stores, because like I mentioned, tamarind is very popular. And as you've mentioned, it's used as a candy in some places. So you can find it in a lot of ethnic stores. Now it's growing in popularity, and so you'll see it kind of coming into kind of mainstream stores as well. And so I think it's making that leap just as we speak. And when it comes to our product specifically, right now, you can get us online at tamarindheads.com. We had amazing reception, an incredible reception at the Fancy Food Show. And so I would say...
Is that your first one, Fancy Food
Show? this was our first one.
Isn't that a trip? Did you ever expect that? it's absolutely wild, isn't it?
It's absolutely wild. Honestly, we were excited to just be in attendance, and then, you know, coming in with the award, we were over the moon. You know, the SFA, the entire team was gracious in having us there and giving us the award, and you know, we had a tremendous reception. And so I think in the coming few months, Anne, I think you're going to see the Tamarind Heads barbecue sauce. And kind of the other SKUs that we have in mind that we've already been working on, in a lot of stores throughout the East, the South, and the West Coast. So we're really excited to what's coming for the company and for the brand.
Yeah, I mean, listeners, just to clarify once and for all, this is a very crowded field, this barbecue sauce thing. And let me tell you, to get a gold, which says you're the best of these hundreds and hundreds of brands, is no small potatoes. I mean, it's really, you must have seen immediate results in your sales and inquiries, right?
Again, Ann, we're over the moon. We're incredibly excited for this honor. You know, it kind of just goes back to the amount of work and effort the entire team has put in, starting from the business side to the culinary side and our focus on the quality to our manufacturer. And I think, again, we're going to see some really great tailwinds coming out of it. So we're already seeing them, like you mentioned. It's kind of off to the races now, and we're really, really excited for what's ahead.
Now, where do you source your tamarind?
That's a great question. You know, I think a part of the years that we spent in terms of production is figuring out where we should get our tamarind. And so right now we have a really interesting blend that we get from kind of many of the areas that I've mentioned where it grows abundantly. We've done a lot of homework in figuring out what is the right kind of tartness and tanginess we want in our product. So we kind of have a very good blend that we feel very comfortable with right now.
Yeah. I really like the juice a lot. I mean, it's just the right amount of everything. I mean, it seems to me that it represents an awful lot of culinary research and work and testing. How long did it take you to develop that?
And I give all of the kudos to my co-founder, Jim. He again is a 30-year plus veteran in the industry, in the culinary and the food industry. It took us over 5 years. You know, it wasn't just about as we tweaked the recipe and tweaked the proportions. A lot of it was sourcing and equipment and finding the right manufacturer who could work with us. As I keep harping on our quality, we don't use any paste. We don't use any concentrate. You know, we go directly from the farm with the tamarind pods into our bottle. And so this is years of, culinary work, manufacturing work, really research and finding out how can we reproduce this quality day in, day out. You know, we couldn't have come to market 2 years ago because we weren't ready. We came to market at this fancy food show because we felt really good about where our product was, and we submitted it for the award, and we're ready, and we got the award, and we're ready to scale, and that's kind of, of those years of effort kind of put us in this position. So we're incredibly excited, and a lot of kudos.
Upscaling is always a challenge, however. I mean, for quality products particularly, you obviously did a lot of market research. I mean, what is your target market?
I think that's a really great question, and there's a handful of really interesting target markets that we go after right away and that as we're in market, we're also learning about. You know, there's a group of people who know tamarind really well in some of the cultures that I mentioned, whether they're from Latin America or the Caribbean or South or East Asian. So, we had a lot of them come by the booth and be blown away by the quality and the product. So I think that's a really great target market because we're introducing a quality at a level that people are familiar with that hasn't been in the market. So that is a really big target. Second is the barbecue consumer. You know, we positioned this as a barbecue sauce to go into the mainstream American market. And so what you're going to find is that this product is positioned just next to any of the traditional barbecue brands that you see out there. So that's a really big target market for us. And we're kind of getting the traction in some of the retail conversations we're having right now in that positioning because, you know, it goes back to our research. That's where Tamarind works the best, and that's where we really get starting to get consumer traction.
Yeah, the one difficulty in that market, from my perspective, is that there are so many big-name cooks and barbecue and cookbook writers and so on that open, start companies and put their name on it, which is a big hurdle when you're starting out.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think it's a crowded field. But, you know, we're standing out with the award that we've received. You know, there's the zeitgeist of Tamarind becoming the flavor of the year. And you're seeing a product here that has no tomatoes and no vinegar. It's a very unique product that when people try it, it's a whole new flavor profile that they haven't had before. And again, it's vegan and it's gluten-free. There's no corn syrup. There's no preservatives. You know, you don't see that in that aisle and in that category. And so you have a product here that's innovative on many, many different levels that I think is resonating. And, you know, will continue to resonate as we grow and expand across the market.
Well, we have everybody wanting this, and what's the fastest way of getting your products?
The fastest way to getting our product in is right through our website. We direct to consumer all around the country. We actually offer free shipping. So you can absolutely go onto the website, tamarindheads.com.
Free shipping?
That's right. You know,
amazing.
We are that excited. We cannot wait to get it out to people. So hop on our website. You can order a bottle. And then, like I mentioned, you will see us in retail stores coast to coast very, very soon. We're really excited for some of the conversations that we had coming out of the show. So, you know, we're looking forward to the next 6 months or so and next year. I think, you know, we have a lot of really good traction, and the team is excited. So grab us online. And if you can't, and if you'll find us in some stores near you in the very near future.
Yeah, remember, it's Tamarind Heads, listeners. And honestly, Sashi, if I were a betting woman, I'd bet on you. I'd bet on Tamarind Heads to really
thank you,
crush
Ann.
The market.
Thank you, and I appreciate it, Ann. Peter, I really appreciate it. You know, look, I'm just the spokesperson here. We have an absolutely incredible team behind this from top down. And I would say that's where really the innovation comes from. You know, it's people that have been, you know, studying the space and have been in the field and, you know, across every different vertical from the culinary side to the business side to the product development side. And, you know, that's kind of what it takes. So, you know, it's definitely not overnight. You know, it takes a lot of work to come here, and we're excited about the reception and can't wait to get it out to people.
Yeah, well, I can tell you we deal with quite a lot of companies, and if my experience with Tamarind Heads is any indication, you're well ahead of the game in terms of how smoothly everything runs, how thoughtful all your composition, the process, the marketing, everything is. As I said, I'd bet on you, Sashi Kuma.
Well, thank you, Anna. I appreciate
success.
That.
Continue.
Thank
success.
You very much. Thank you very much.
Yes, and I love talking to you.
Thank you. Likewise. Again, thank you so much for having myself and the Tamarind Heads brand and the team on the podcast. It's wonderful to be in touch, and I look forward to, you know, other conversations down the road when you can find us
yeah,
in a lot
us,
more retail.
Keep
stores.
Us on your list.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you. Likewise, and hope you guys had a great July 4th, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Can you play this?
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
There we go.
Okay. All right. Yeah, listeners, one of the more surprising rebranding experiences I've had is in the rebranding and expansion of Manischewitz, who I've known since before I was a child. We're talking to Talia Sabag, who is what is your are you a brand manager? Are you a, what is your position?
So I'm the marketing manager here at Manischewitz. Hi, I'm Talia. I'm the marketing manager here at Manischewitz. I'm so excited to talk to you today about our rebrand and some really cool, new, exciting things we've got going on.
Well,
where are you physically, Talia?
So right now I'm here in Bayonne, where we are, where we're headquartered.
Okay. So you just slid
the,
across
the center
river.
Of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Bayonne,
exactly.
New Jersey.
Right. Yeah.
No, I used to live in Philadelphia, so I made that route frequently.
Mrs. Haig needs to give me a little more volume, sweetheart.
Can you speak a little louder, Talia?
Oh, hi. Yeah, is this good now?
Yeah, good.
Perfect.
I didn't know that much about Manischewitz. I mean, I knew about the kosher wine. But when we got this box of products, my mouth fell open with surprise. I had no idea that you were involved in that many different products. And everything's redesigned. Well, what started this? Were you just trying to reclaim market share?
So that's a great question. Of course, when you are as old as we are, gosh, since 1888, you need a facelift too, right? So what started this is we looked at the landscape of what is Manischewitz, what is Jewish food. What is the audience? What do they look like now? Where are they? What do they do? And what do they want to eat? We started with the really key, important questions, and then we worked through that, really tried to get to the heart of who, what, why, and then the rebrand is intentionally to answer those questions. So it's not just a market share or new products. It's much more big picture than that. It's much more holistic. It's about looking at the future of Manischewitz and positioning ourselves for another amazing 136 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly an iconic brand.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. But I was interested in how you're going to attach all these new products to the historical Manischewitz brand?
That's a phenomenal question, I think. So I guess I'd like to start with what makes the Manischewitz brand tick, right? So we are fine purveyors of Jewish cuisine. What is Jewish cuisine? Jewish American cuisine specifically. It's wide-ranging. It's an entire culture of food. So it's not just sweets, it's not just fish or savory, et cetera. It's an entire way, it's an entire culture, right? So How do these new products speak to that? Well, we've got babka, we've got rugula, we've got hamantaschen, iconic Jewish American sweets. Perfect. Yep. Delicious and chocolatey and yummy. And on the other side of that, of new products.
Peter's become the hit of our swim club because he's been taking over the chocolate and the pistachio sweets.
Oh, I love that. I love that. So that's the sweet side, right? But and then of course, they come out with these. I'm sorry?
That people actually, though, express surprise. I mean, I don't know how long you've been promoting this, but nobody had a clue that you had expanded so far.
Well, see, of course, that's the crazy thing, right, is some of these products are so iconically Jewish American that it kind of feels so right that a lot of people start to question, hold on, are these new products or have you been making them the whole time? And that's how you know you really hit the right formula on a new product, right, when it feels so organic, so intrinsic to the brand that it makes people feel like it's been there a million years, right? So you ask how these things are all connected. We came out with potato knishes a couple months ago. I mean, gosh, sure, it has, if you look at it from the standpoint of traditional retail, right, one's a sweet, one's a savory hors d'oeuvre, they've got nothing to do with each other. But when you look at it from the cultural perspective of the cuisine, of course, you know, there are knishes and babka and rugluf. These are all things that would commonly be available in a Jewish bakery or a deli counter, right? So what binds these products? What connects them? And what fuels us for more new products that are going to come out, keep coming out with great hits, is that we come back to our roots and we come out with products that speak to our roots. And so what connects them all, what connects our brand to our products, to our people, is the culture. And what's really exciting about this rebrand,
and potato pancakes, just by the way.
Yes, exactly. Potato pancakes. Now, that's a product that we've had potato pancake mix since far longer than I've even been alive. But we're going to start coming out with, but there are different iterations of it. There are home style. There's veggie potato pancakes, reduced sodium. There's something for everyone in our portfolio, right? So to come to that conversation around culture, what does that mean to us? We're not exclusive. We're not trying to be Manischewitz we're not making it for Jewish people. We're making Jewish food for everyone because we know our food is delicious. And we're so excited to bring it out to the world because we're proud of our heritage and we want to share our heritage with everybody. We think of ourselves over at Manischewitz as a big round table filled with potato knishes and babka and yummy lox and matzah sandwiches and just like the best things that remind me anyway of childhood and comfort. And it's a big open table, and we want everyone to come take a seat with us at the table and come and experience Jewish joy, Jewish culture, and, of course, the most deliciously chocolatey piece of – I keep bringing up babka because I guess I got a sweet tooth – the most chocolatey, delicious piece of babka and a nice strong cup of coffee. Who can't love that, right?
How long did this transformation – how long was it ongoing? I mean, there was so much. There's so much new. It hasn't taken a long time.
So it has. So this has definitely been very much a work in progress of the past 3 years. Very much so. We spent a lot of time being very intentional and making sure that we had just everything. Just so before we unveiled our new look to the world. So, yeah, to answer the question, it's definitely been in the works for a long time.
Right. And you redesigned the packaging, which would have to have been a big part of the rebranding, huh?
Oh, yeah. But we redesigned everything from the ground up. The packaging is obviously a huge, huge component. But
it's so much cleaner. Number one. And number two, it tells you things that, you know, you didn't read on the old packaging. It just tells you right up front. You know, it says what it is.
Here's a really dumb question. Who owns Manischewitz?
That's not a dumb question. No, it's a great question. So Manischewitz is a Keiko brand. So the Keiko family of brands is a beautiful portfolio. Of course, we're here to talk about Manischewitz, but some other names in the Keiko portfolio you may recognize, Kedem grape juice, of course, Baron Herzog wines over in our wine division, here over in food, can't stop talking about food, I'm a food girly, is Tuscanini, Geffen, and among many others. So, yes, we are very proud of, obviously, Manischewitz, but it is part of a larger family of brands.
Yeah, now, we've interviewed various bits and pieces of Keiko.
Okay.
We spend a lot of time on royal wines.
Oh, okay, great. So then you know all about the amazing work they do over there at Royal.
Yeah, not only appreciating them, but drinking them too.
Of course.
So now, when did you start to really unveil the new Manischewitz? When did you? I mean, it's way before the fancy fashion.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, great question. So we unveiled right before Passover, understanding that Passover is such a key time for our industry, for matzah. I mean, gosh, we are Manischewitz, Manischewitz matzah. So, yes, we unveiled our rebrand for Passover that is a time of very key awareness and great new products. We put out the gluten-free potato knishes and frozen matzo balls this year as part of our new products for Passover, unveiling the rebrand. And we've just been coming out with hit after hit ever since, rolled straight into fancy food. You should just, guys, stay tuned for what we've got coming up for the winter, because it should knock the socks off you.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah.
How long have you worked with Manischewitz?
Myself, personally? Over 3 years.
Okay, and were you in food before that?
I was, before I came over here to Manischewitz, I worked with a variety of other brands.
A variety of what kind of brands?
Of other brands.
But you were in food.
Yeah.
You've been in food for a long time.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
It has to have been overwhelming when you saw all the work involved being laid out in front of you. I mean, it was a very brave move to take that on.
Thank you. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say overwhelming for myself. I don't think I felt overwhelmed. More just particular to I am totally fueled. Entirely excited because it is so big and it is so grand, and I appreciate you saying brave because I personally think it also was bold, and I'm so happy to see how much it has resonated throughout not just our industry but also to consumers, that they feel in talking to them that this is bold and that it is reaching out to them and pulling them in, and I'm like, feel so appreciative. I had this great response, but also, like I said, fueled. Because now, of course, you know, when you have a hit, you got to have a second hit, third hit. You got to keep coming out with good ones. So,
yeah, what's your second act?
Yeah, exactly. They say success is addictive. So, like I said, we've got coming out in winter. More new products that I hope you guys stay very tuned for, because while I can't necessarily, I can tease them, but I can't exactly say, trust me, in a few months when it all comes out, you'll be like, whoa, that's what she was talking about. Cool. So, delicious stuff every season.
Now, you always have, when you change a classic brand, you always have mm-hmm. a mixed response, including naysayers. I mean, have you had a mixed response or not?
I mean, like you said, as always, there will always be naysayers. So, of course, we do have some who, I think the most common was people saying, and I totally hear this criticism, that in changing our packaging so dramatically, we may have confused some of the older set who spent Passover looking the shelves for their favorite matzah and just basically felt that, I guess, Manischewitz disappeared.
Right.
So that was a little bit of a moment where we essentially had to be like, hey, guys.
I can see that. I can see that happening. Yeah.
Yes. So we did have a few of our older clientele struggling to find us on the shelves. So we got a few tweets about that. But other than that, the response has been so overwhelmingly positive.
Right. Well, I mean, for good reasons. The one thing is, it's always been quality. You may not like the quality. I mean, I never liked Manischewitz wine because I don't like sweet wine. You know, I mean, that was the old Manischewitz, and they clarified that.
Yeah.
But you can't say, I mean, there are lots and lots of people who loved it, so you can't say that there was anything intrinsically wrong with the product. It was just a matter of landing on a taste. I mean, like, how many different products do you have now under the Manischewitz brand?
That's a great question. I can't give you that exact number because it is a very large number, and I think I lost count after 150.
I mean, I was absolutely astounded to find half of what was in that box.
Yeah. Just, gosh, the flavors, the number of flavors we have on just macaroons alone. So, yeah, the variety. We have something for everybody. We definitely must have something for everybody. But to answer one of your points before regarding wine, I just want to bring up that we're actually, so while we are very fortunate and grateful to have such a wonderful relationship with Manischewitz Wine, we are not Manischewitz Wine. Manischewitz Wine is a Gallo brand.
Is it really?
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
It's a licensing agreement. So most people don't realize this. In fact, I didn't know this at all until I started at Manischewitz. Manischewitz Wine, since day one, has been a licensing agreement between Manischewitz.
I never knew that.
And the wine, most people
for
have
a
never
long
heard
time,
of it.
And I never knew that.
Since the 1940s. Yeah, so basically when Prohibition ended, a wine producer in upstate New York, which had no brand because you couldn't, because of the rules of the laws of Prohibition, kosher wine was allowed to be created, manufactured, and sold for religious reasons, but could not be branded and distributed and marketed. So when Prohibition ended, they were allowed to actually create wine brands out of these kosher brands. So one such winery reached out to Manischewitz and said, you have a very recognizable brand, because at this point, you know, it had been like 50 years of Manischewitz at this point, of Manischewitz matzah. Yeah, so they reached out to Manischewitz and said, we would like to license the name Manischewitz and have such an agreement in the 1940s. Late 30s, and so thus Manischewitz Wine was born. But like I said, it's always been a licensing agreement. We don't produce.
Well, that actually adds another major achievement, being able to overcome that kind of a perception to create this whole new brand. I mean, I think you're a miracle lady.
Thank you.
And your team.
Thank you so much.
What was the name of the guy who plugged the brand? Aldo Celli. He was the spokesperson for Manischewitz sweet white wines.
Oh yeah, or Sammy Davis Jr. He was also a spokesperson for Manischewitz in the
70s.
Yeah, those really famous commercials he did.
here's a funny little story for you. And the location is extreme northern eastern Italy. And Ed and Peter are traveling that particular part of the country. And we went to a winery that was one of any number that we visited, in fact. And the family that ran this vineyard was named Gallo.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. But, might be the same.
No.
The Gallo family said, no, you won't. you may think you can sell this wine as Gallo wine, but you cannot. And
he couldn't use his own name and his own brand.
Didn't seem entirely fair, but I guess love and war can be like that, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, trademark law is like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way you could, if you were named Gallo and wanted a wine named Gallo, that you could fight the big Gallo conglomerate. You couldn't do that.
Yeah, there was no way. No way.
No. Poor guy.
It's a losing battle. Yeah.
So, what are some of some items that actually will shock our listeners to know that Manischewitz now produces?
That Manischewitz now produces?
Yes.
Oh, shocked.
I mean, what are some of the more startling things? I mean, I think we got a rousing astonishment out of the fact that they made the sweet things. Nobody could believe that.
Okay, so shocking, like you wouldn't believe it. So we just came out with vegetarian egg rolls.
I'll be darned. You're kidding. Vegetarian
there you go.
Egg rolls.
Yes, we're shocking. Vegetarian egg rolls. So you may think, what's the connection there? Vegetarian egg rolls. How random. They're really popular at like bar mitzvahs and pot mitzvahs and that sort of like appetizing sort of deal. So when we came out with our appetizing line of our hors d'oeuvres, we're thinking, you know, what kind of hors d'oeuvres do we always see at every party? We're like, oh my gosh. Vegetarian egg rolls, like the mini kind, like little cocktail egg rolls. So, hey, that's the beauty of it. You just get to have fun with it sometimes.
Well, you know, I mean, I just keep thinking about how overwhelming a task it has been to do this rebrand. Because I know enough about the kosher designation and process to understand how much work had to be involved in dealing with all these products.
Oh, yeah. But that's the beauty of Keiko. You know, we're really, how do I say this? We're really resourceful, at finding a product and really honing in on the packaging, on the product, on the marketing, exactly like that, and making sure we have the exact, from a kosher perspective, oh yeah, like an art. So we got it down to an art and a science.
Yeah. Now,
it's a perk of being part of this beautiful family of brands.
You mentioned something that actually had occurred to me too, concerning your market. I mean, I assumed that your market would be broadly American.
Yes.
American Jewish.
Yes.
But do you do overseas stuff or other foreign markets or something?
I mean, yes.
And, I mean,
to a limited extent,
like
for example, Canada.
Uh-huh.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, to a limited extent.
Yeah.
To a limited extent, yeah. We do have some international distribution, but Manischewitz particularly, not a Keiko question, but Manischewitz is a Jewish American brand, and we really do focus on the American market, American referring to the United States, not the continent. So while Keiko is a family of brands, we have a major European distribution, Canadian distribution. We have a very sizable division in South America. Manischewitz itself is, from a branding perspective, we really like to focus on the United States. You know, I'm not sure if you know this. Most people don't know this. Manischewitz was founded in Cincinnati, actually. Well, I know that people think about...
It sounds like it should be New York.
It's not. Yeah, exactly. People think that, you know, the Jewish American community is so associated with New York, and because we're here in New Jersey right now, there's this... people think of us as an East Coast company, which I get. But again, we were founded in Cincinnati, and we were traded on the Cincinnati Stock Exchange in the 1920s. This is a very American company.
Yeah, I encountered this a little bit. But I can't remember the name of the company when I lived in Indianapolis. It was, which was really kind of peculiar because, I mean, if there were 12 people in the whole state that were Jewish, I'd be surprised, you know. But there was a company that started there, too, and I can't remember what the kosher company was. Do you know?
I don't. I'm not 100%. I'm not 100%.
The big corporate dog in Cincinnati was Procter & Gamble.
Right.
But that was mostly detergent.
Yeah.
You probably didn't eat a whole lot of it.
Yeah. So the thing about what you said, it's really interesting. Most people, you know, this is a little part of Jewish American history in America, right? Like a little tidbit. People don't realize that same for the entire American story, when pioneers, you know, came to the shores in search of the chuck wagon life, heading west. The Jewish story is not independent of that. It's not outside of that. The Jewish American story mirrors that of every other immigrant story in America in a lot of ways. You know, we came and then we went west almost immediately. And there were huge communities, and there still are very, very, very sizable communities in places like Cincinnati, Indianapolis, Cleveland, St. Louis, all across the Midwest, because we chuck wagoned like the rest of them. We made our way across America in search of a better life, too.
Outside of Indianapolis, there are not many Jewish communities in Indiana.
No, we do tend to stick to urban. We tend to stick to urban areas as a people, every urban area in America has a Jewish community.
Right.
Some are bigger, some are smaller, and to bring it back to Manischewitz, that's, you know, we serve them all. You know, Manischewitz, for those who are outside of New York or L.A. or Miami or Chicago, when you go to a supermarket in, you know, anywhere in the Midwest or the South, et cetera, and you go to a kosher section, what's there? So Manischewitz is America's kosher food for a long time, but we're not. So talking about the rebrand, what does it mean to transition from kosher to Jewish, right? Because we haven't changed. We're not kosher anymore. Of course we're still kosher, proudly so. But we're reaching out to we're not neglecting our audience of people who keep kosher. We are still a very proud kosher company. But what does it mean to be Jewish is that we're excited to be bringing our Jewish culture to a much broader audience who may or may not be interested in a kosher certification, who just might want a really killer bowl of chicken soup.
Well,
no one makes a matzo ball like Manischewitz. No, I know. It's so hot right now. Who wants a bowl of chicken soup? I hear you. No one wants that.
But you could put a fried egg. You could put a fried egg on top, right?
Perfect. Exactly. You know, that's exactly it, right? Is that Jewish American food is comfort food. It's cultural food, and it's yummy, and it makes you feel good. Like, it hits that place, right? Like a bowl of chicken noodle soup or chicken matzo ball soup, they're beloved classics for a reason. So we're not turning a new page and leaving our history behind. We're bringing our history with us into the future and expanding everything to a whole new world. Because, you know, frankly, if Taco Tuesdays can be a thing, and I can have a taco on Taco Tuesday, and I love my tacos on Taco Tuesday, but I assure you I'm not a Mexican-American person, then why can't anyone have a wonderful bowl of matzo ball soup on Monday? We can call it Matzo Ball Monday. Matzo ball to everybody.
Mm-hmm. And I was talking to somebody, and I revived that old Marilyn Monroe joke about the matzo ball.
Yes, and I've heard people love telling that joke to me. It's so funny.
The what?
People love telling that joke. Yeah, it's like the classic Marilyn joke.
Well, I found somebody who had never heard it, which I thought was pretty funny.
Well, then I think it's the perfect time to share it, in case there is anyone listening who's like, wait, what's the Marilyn Monroe joke?
What did they do with the rest of the matzahs? Matzo ball soup.
Yeah,
she was married to Arthur Miller at the time, which mm-hmm. is a good Jewish name.
Yeah, people don't realize she converted to Judaism.
Well, I don't know what you're going to do next. Are you going to continue expanding numerically, or how are you going to, market-wise, how are you going to do this? What comes next with Manischewitz?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, ideally, we'd like to do both at the same time, right? But life seldom works out like that. So we're going to be expanding, obviously expanding our audience all the while, but we're expanding, as you brought up earlier, in terms of new products, very, very much seasonally. Every season we're coming out with a new slew of exciting things to sink your teeth into. Expanding our product lineup. We also talk about expansion. Wanted to plug our merch collection. Talk about an iconic brand we are. And, we came up with a really cool line of merch available on our Amazon storefront with fun Yiddishisms, we call them. We have tote bags that say schlep across it. Schlep, you know, like to carry your stuff. Got a schlep. I get to the supermarket. Perfect. We got to a schlepping bag. Schlep to the supermarket with us. We have a tank top that says Man I Schwitz, which is actually just our spelling, just spaced. But Schwitz, for those who don't know, means to sweat profusely. So it's just, you know, like putting a little humor in things, because we have a good sense of humor over here.
I have a bunch of friends I won't tell that to. I hope listeners, I hope you all caught that too, because that's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, it's so much fun. And it's available on Amazon. So, hey, anyone can have a funny T-shirt or a really cute, funny schlep bag too. And I believe you should have some of the merch in your goodie box that we sent you.
Yes.
Right.
Great.
Yeah.
Glad to.
And we have some friends that collect vintage and unusual T-shirts. And
well,
and
that should be right there, Ellie.
Really well for two T-shirts in my box.
Oh,
it was an intense debate as to who should get these shirts.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I realize people, when they see it, they love it, because it's humorous, and, you know, gosh, who doesn't need a good laugh?
Yeah.
So,
who could not use a good laugh right now, huh?
Exactly. Exactly. So,
you're one brave woman and a very resourceful person, and in the company. One final thing is just, could you spell Manischewitz for people?
I'd love to. Manischewitz. But I will say, once you've gotten to know us, call us by our nickname. We're Manny.
So you can use the band name. Great. Well, it's been an absolute delight, Talia, talking
to you.
And,
thank you so much.
You're doing a great job, and I really appreciate your talking to us about it. And I appreciate knowing about it at the top of everything else. So,
well, thank
what
you
a
so
revelation
much. I
you
really.
Do.
Oh, thanks. I'm really glad I got to. I mean, thank you so much for having me. I'm really glad I could talk to you about our rebrand and give you some little fun tidbits you didn't know, evidently.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, and have a continuing success.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Have a wonderful day. Great start to the week,
thank
right?
You.
Great Monday.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All righty. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.